WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
When you started singing, were there a lot of listeners who assumed you were a woman?
Yes. Yes, I had people play the records after doing them with Lionel Hampton. And they'd have contests on the programs to have the public tell them who it was. And many people called women's names. And finally, it was announced that it was not a woman, but it was myself whom was singing with Lionel Hampton at the time. And then I've even had people in the public question, is he really a guy, or is that a woman standing there, you know? Those things have happened, you know. But being in the business, you learn early in the business that opinions are not supposed to affect the work you do in public, you know.
Nevertheless, though, how self-conscious were you when people assumed that you were a woman? Were you self-conscious about the pitch of your voice?
Not really. There were times I could say later in the career that I wished that my voice would be deeper for materials that I might have wanted to select to do. But that's the style of my voice. There's nothing I could do about the height of my voice. And so I learned to deal with it.
I want to play one of your early records. Mm-hmm. This is from 1955. This is your first session for Savoy. And this song is Don't Cry, Baby. Mm-hmm. And Bud Johnson's on tenor saxophone. Charles Mingus is on bass. Let's hear it. This is a great recording from 1955. Jimmy Scott. Something I read about this session was that Mingus, who was featured on bass, walked out during the session. What happened?
Well, you know, one of the things, of all guys, to be confused about a singer singing behind the beat, it was quite surprising to know that he was affected by my style of singing. Because I do have a delayed behind-the-beat, you know, expression when I sing a song. And that was one of the things. He just says he couldn't cope with it. This guy ain't singing on time. It's, you know, what are we doing here, you know? And he was very strict, arrogant guy about that, you know.
My guest is Jimmy Scott. More after a break. This is Fresh Air.
You ain't been blue, no, no, no.
Let's get back to our 1992 interview with Jimmy Scott. Some of the people who were influenced a lot by your singing style include Nancy Wilson and Frankie Lyman. Did you hear yourself in them when they started to record? Did you notice the influence?
Well, you know, it was mentioned to me. I didn't pay specific attention to what it was like, but it was related to me by others. Oh, man, Nancy sings that song just like you would have sang it. Or Frankie Valli, he's using those high notes just like you would do them, or something like that, you know. When I began, I realized through our relationship or our association, but I've told this often, and it's true, I came up in the business when artists, like vocalists, shared a lot of music with each other. Therefore, I could understand that we could pick up things from each other. And, of course, Nancy's was surprising because her parents have often told me how when they would bring the records I'd do home, she would get herself and lock herself in her room and just listen over and over and over.
One of your big breaks was in 1948 when Lionel Hampton asked you to sing with the band. And after he hired you, Hampton changed your age from 25 to 17. Why did he do that?
I don't know whether you remember, but a Sugar Child Robinson.
Right. He was a dancer,
pianist,
wasn't he?
Yeah, a little pianist and a boogie-woogie player. This little kid used to play boogie-woogie in the piano. He was out of Detroit, out of the Michigan area. And Hamp had picked him up. Well, he had done great with Sugar Child. He had toured him all over, and he was quite successful with it. Well, he was into a thing of giving young persons opportunities. I looked young, and by looking young, he wanted that young appearance on stage. And I think that that's really the gimmick that was being used, you know?
Well, how'd you feel about that?
Well, it didn't work too well with me. Because I'm a grown man, you know? So I couldn't develop an attitude of childhood as far as being in the public, you know? And it didn't work.
Well, also, I can imagine, you know, a lot of 25, you want to meet women, too, and if you're...
Well, see, one thing about it, I had the first wife.
Oh, you were married already.
I was married already, you know. And, we were separated, but I was married, really. That means I was dating women, you know.
Right.
And how could you go around dating women and the public see you with women and... whatnot, they say, oh, that kid? Because I had many people tell me, get out of a bar, because they thought I was a kid, you know?
How tall were you then?
I was about 4'11". Yeah, about 4'11".
So that must have made it even more difficult.
Yes, because I didn't start to growing the size I am now until, I was darn near 40 years old.
That's really unusual, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. But that was a glandular and a hormonal deficiency that caused that, the syndrome thing that caused that. And then when it did react, then I started growing.
Were you taking any kind of hormonal pills when you started to grow?
No.
So it's just like your hormonal balance changed?
Yes. It was just like a delayed thing, you know?
So how tall are you now?
I'd say 5'10".
Mm-hmm.
5'8", really. Yeah, about 5'8".
Now, when you were undergoing this hormonal change, it didn't affect your voice at all?
Not at all.
Were you glad that it didn't affect your voice?
Afterwards, yes. After I realized just what was happening, I said, well, thank God. It didn't affect, but now it did make it stronger. I project stronger. If you notice the old records, they're much lighter, vocally much lighter in sound than the records that I'm doing today.
Now, how is your new record affecting your career? Are you performing more now?
Yes, I see more prospects for performing. Now, I'll say that. And I have been doing... I'm doing more the kind of dates that I'd like to do. You see...
Not playing CD bars, playing
right.
Classy
I mean,
places.
Before it was a necessity to work. Okay, now this enables and makes it possible for me to do less of that tight thing. Of course, I had strayed from it anyway. I had gotten to the point where, hey, if I gotta go in one of the dives to do a gig, no good. And I began working for small organizations and doing concerts and things like that for them in their promotions and things when they wanted fundraisers and things like that. Then I started performing for little organizations. That worked out well because that left the performance to be more or less like a concert style. You know?
What's the worst part about performing in a dive?
Well, most of it is that the people there are not really conscious of the music that you're trying to portray. They're there for the drink and a hell of a good time, and they ignore completely what's going on where the entertainment is concerned. So that begins to get awkward with you, you know, when you go out there and you do have a purpose to your work. Okay? All right, if I was a rock and roll singer or a noise maker as far as my performance, it wouldn't matter, I'm sure, because that's what they called for. But seeing the dives and things, hey.
Did you ever feel like you would never record again, that you had made your last record?
No. No, I never felt like that it would be the end. I know I've been, I've had statements made, who in the heck wants to hear a 60-year-old singer? And that statement was made, it was heartening, you know, because you say, well, hey, why should a guy feel like that about it? But then, I mean, the answer was there. They're listening to Frank Sinatra, they're listening to Tony Bennett, they can listen to Jimmy Scott, too.
Jimmy Scott, recorded in 1992. Let's hear a track from his new CD, Mood Indigo. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
There will be many other nights like this.